Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
My name's Alyssa.
Welcome back. Last week was very exciting.
You had the coolest interview
of my life.
So cool.
Oh my gosh.
So cool.
I'm still fangirling.
We need a debrief of this day because I was supposed to be there.
You were. Yeah. I told him too. I was like, Alyssa was supposed to be with us.
So we did it on a Thursday. Normally Thursdays are my day off, but I had to work. And I left work at like the perfect time to get home to have like 30 minutes to set up, be ready. And then I got stuck in the world's worst traffic and didn't get home until basically you were done.
Yeah.
Crazy. But then as soon as it was over, I just downloaded it and watched it.
Yeah, I called you right after. I was like, Alyssa, yeah. I did it.
Yeah.
I did the interview.
So cool. So exciting.
It was wild. I was really sad that you were not there, but I did talk about you a lot in the interview itself. So
yeah, and he seemed enthused about maybe coming back again one day. Mm-hmm. So
I think he seemed excited about that opportunity maybe. So hopefully maybe in a couple months we'll reach out to him again and see if he's still interested. So he was awesome. He was so nice. He was so kind. He liked all the questions. So I think it was a good time. I think he had fun. I hope he had fun. So we learned a lot of good things. So if you haven't watched the
interview,
go watch the interview because it's real good.
And by the time this comes out, the bonus chapter should be on Audible.
Yes, because this will be after July 1st. Yay.
Dog's barking. Marvel's excited too.
Oh, it's okay. My kid's still jumping in the bouncer in the background. So we're just moms trying to have a podcast. Yeah, no worries.
We're just moms talking about Quicksilver.
Oh, we're real ladies. You got it.
It's just paperback.
Because it's a beautiful paperback.
When the new ones come out, I will probably get them. Like the new cover comes out,
yes,
I'll probably get 100%. Both so they match. But I finally got it.
I love it. Okay, so I don't know if you know this, and it'll be a week late by the time this episode comes out as well, but I learned in the Instagram Live that Callie Hart had, she mentioned that in the Waterstones edition, there is a Carrion bonus chapter.
Yes.
Okay,
I also didn't know this.
Went deep on the internet. Still could not find it.
You're talking about the like one that already is out, like the first book.
So in Quicksilver, I didn't know if it was like a custom special edition Waterstones one or if it was the regular paperback Waterstones one, but somewhere on the Waterstones website, there is a Quicksilver book that includes a Carrion bonus chapter.
I'll find it.
And I went on TikTok and I can find the page that says, turn this page for a bonus chapter. That's the page. Like nobody. Why are you guys not being awful and posting these bonus chapters?
So
please post them so I can read them.
So I saw it was like the Waterstones Brimstone edition that's going to be coming out, and I have the like special edition UK A Fate Forged in Fire, which I had mailed to us, and I showed Austin and he was like, oh, we'll order it. He's like, I'm not against ordering a book and paying from the UK to get it over here. So
oh my gosh, I want all the editions, and then I just want a shelf like full of Quicksilver editions. They're that's so pretty, pretty.
That's how I am with A Fate Forged in Fire. I have like four versions of that book now.
Get all
a
the
new
versions.
One just arrived. The German edition just arrived. German.
I love it. Now you're going to learn German. We've talked about this. You're going to learn German just for that book so you can
it's
read it.
It's here now. Yeah.
I love it. I can't wait. And then she also said on there that the goal is she's contracted for 3 books, but the goal is for 5. Maybe like 3 Quicksilver ones and then 2 like side editions. She did also say that she is hoping and wishing for like a Carrion like novella, which I think would be amazing.
Yeah.
So many goals.
And then we'll get her on the podcast.
One day. One day.
It could happen.
She's a busy lady. We're a tiny baby podcast. So, but maybe we did reach out. We did say, hey, do you want to come hang out with us a little bit?
Yeah.
We'll see if she replies. Again, busy woman. I get it.
Yeah.
She's got big things coming up in her life. She's already working on book 3. She has the title for book 3.
It's exciting.
So she can't tell us the title for book 3 because it'll give away a spoiler in book 2. So when book 2 comes out, she can then tell us the title for book 3. So many secrets, so many things being kept under lock and key.
Yeah.
That I cannot wait for.
So exciting.
It's going to be so fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I know it's going to be great. I'm ready. So in this week, though, we were almost done with the book. We have just a few episodes left. Yep. We are very close to being done. We are covering chapters 31 through 34 today. So in chapter 31, The Darn, the setting that we have here is they're at the war camp. They're on the opposite side of the river. So it's Saris, Fisher, and Wren. They're on the opposite side. There's a horde of feeders across the way from the war camp itself. And Saris decides that she's going to fight with them today. She's like, I'm not hiding. I'm not going. Fisher's like hesitant at first, but he does agree that she can stay out there and fight, right? So she notes there are more of the horde downriver where it's larger compared to where the river is only 50 feet across. And I thought it was interesting that this time she used feet. Because normally we hear like not feet. We hear other metric, like units of measure.
A league. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe it's not. Maybe you don't say like an eighth of a league.
Oh, maybe. Maybe it has to be just one league. Like there's no half of a league. Or was there half of a league? There might have been half of a league earlier in chapters. An eighth. I don't know.
I think it was said 3 to 4 leagues. But
yeah.
Regardless.
Like when she's talking about like the size of the table.
Yes.
I think she might say half of a league or a league long. And yeah, I just thought I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So she does know, again, like the feathers are down way where the river is longer, take more to get across. But Wren tells us, he says, vampires can't pass over running water. They sense the current there and are afraid. But inevitably, one of them dares to step out onto the ice. The others will follow. So I thought that was interesting.
They can't swim.
Well, because they're dead, right?
So why do you lose your swimming abilities when you die?
I think it's the cognitive thought to move your arms and legs in that manner.
Why can't they just walk across the bottom?
Well, they can. Right? Well, because a couple chapters in, they start climbing up the other side.
Yeah.
They had to like
current crawl just too strong here, like they'd get swept away.
That's what I'm thinking is, yeah, like so some parts of the river, the current is just too much. And they again, they sense it. They're like, ooh, that's not very, I don't know what they think about. They don't talk, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they sense that the current is too wild. And so therefore they go to an easier part of the river. So it's still even interesting that they have thought of that as well. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're literally dead. They're nothing.
It's an instinct thing, I guess.
Right. It is. It's a little weird. It's really hard to really think about and understand and comprehend.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I don't know. It's odd. It's a weird concept. I like them, but I still have trouble wrapping my mind around it.
I like the feeders.
I'm like, I like the concept of them. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I got you.
Anywhere, however you want to explain that. I'm like, I like the feeders.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. I like Madra. I like all of them. I like every character in the book. It's fine.
No.
Only, I just, sometimes if you look at the beginning episodes that we've created, there was just some things that I was like, Okay, Madra, go off.
I texted you this the other day, but speaking of unlikable characters to some, Austin was listening to the podcast and you talked about Danya. And Danya. He was like, I can't get on board. He was like, I'm a Nesta girly through and through. I can't get on board with Danya. And I was like, wait, you must read the bonus chapters first before you can have an opinion.
Agreed.
So I'll check back in about that with you. But as of now, he's like, Nesta, yes. Danya, no.
You know, and for right now, that's okay. Because I do get it. And I have swayed two people. I have swayed you and I have swayed Cass. So if I can, and if you can sway Cass about that, it's because I have never been able to sway her about Nesta yet. So I have faith that Austin will come around.
Who was I talking to? Or maybe it was a comment that was like, Danya is not a girl's girl. I saw it the other day and I was laughing.
If she doesn't know you, right? But and then I even later in the same in these chapters too, we'll talk about a little bit more about Danya and her actions, because Danya gets some things that happen to her, right? That
yeah,
which I get, like she loses a hand, all the things. But again, she didn't know Saris. She wasn't involved in any of the stuff that they went through when Saris and Kingfisher and Ren were all together, like building this bond and trying to figure all these things out together, right? Danya was kind of left out of the loop after being in the pack for so long. So, and it is interesting that she is so against humans. And I also thought, I was thinking about the other day, and I thought it was very interesting that it is Fae against human instead of like human against Fae, right? Like no one has been like, oh, these Fae, right? They're like, oh, these humans.
Yeah.
So well, they don't even
think that world exists, right? Like most of them.
Yeah, so, true. I wonder if they would feel the same.
Yeah, it's a little different than ACOTAR, right? Because like ACOTAR, they know they're there. They're true. Just on the other side of this wall. Mm-hmm. But
that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, even Kingfisher calls her human at first.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was just thinking when you were saying like Danya's distaste for humans. I feel like Fisher was the same way. Like he likes that human the same way you would spit any other kind of insult. So mm-hmm.
True. Isn't that weird?
I don't know.
She's like really on it though. But I'm not saying what she did was good. Like Danya made bad choices. However, the miscommunication trope in this didn't help anybody. Okay.
No, it never does.
It never does. It didn't help anybody. If they would have a couple more sentences, if they would have been said, all problems would have been solved.
Yes.
So we're going to give Danya grace. I want to make a sticker of it. Give Danya grace. Don't worry. Austin will come
around. I'm going to make you a sticker that's like Nesta and Danya girly.
Yeah. Yes.
Nesta and Danya brunch club.
Alyssa, that's so cute.
I'll make you one.
I want this sticker.
And anybody else who likes Nesta and Danya can have one.
You guys can all have stickers. Stickers for everybody. You have to come to the Nesta and Danya side, though. For real.
You have to be able to sit at that table to have the sticker.
Yes. You have to want to sit there.
Yes.
I want to sit there. I want to sit back and just watch them talk so much shit. It's my dream. So anyways, we got way off topic. Back to the war. The war, the horde of feeders that is happening on the river's eye. So at this point in time in the chapter, Malcolm has not made himself present, but the amount of feeders on the other side is no joke. There's a ton of them. And one by one, they start to step onto the ice. So a lot of them fall in, but not all of them. Some of the lighter ones, like the older people, like the smaller ones, they start making it across. Fisher does not immediately use his magic for this because we learn that there are rules of war. He says, we are bound by the rules of war. We can't use magic to attack or affect an enemy until that enemy has breached our border. And anyway, our magic doesn't work on a Sanus Rothian soil. Fey magic needs light and life to survive, and there's nothing on their side of the river but death, darkness, and decay. Our lands are divided directly down the center line of the Darn. But the second these fuckers cross over, it's a bet. So I thought that was interesting. And it makes me question what is going to happen now that she is the queen. Because we know, obviously, at the end of this book, what happens.
It also is interesting to me that, like, these rules exist. If the rules didn't exist, he still wouldn't have been using magic because it doesn't work on their soil. So I feel like the rules existing, like, is that going to play a part later? Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
right.
He could have just said, I can't use magic till they get across onto our soil. But instead it was, no, there's like these rules of war, and also they need to be on our soil.
Well, because the soil part, yes, but if you're talking mid-river, there's no soil on there. So he could technically, right, use his shadows in the middle of the river or three-fourths across the river. But I find it interesting, like Malcolm is sending the feeders across, which I guess are cursed, right, but not imbued with magic. So do the rules go both ways? And like, who made these rules? Where is like the treaty for these rules? Is there like a signed paper? Yeah. What Fae decided that these are the rules of war? Like halfway across the river. Point. I hope that there is like a back history there. Just because I'm curious of who decided the rules.
That's interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah, right, Jinx. So we learn again that the magic can't go across the way. So the second the first feeder crossed the border, so he's halfway across, Wren and Fisher both unleashed their magic at the same time. Wren's blue and white orb went up into the sky and crashed down on the feeders, smashing the remaining ice into shards and rendering everybody safe. So he throws it up, it comes down, bam, everyone's good for now, right? So we are reminded that this war has gone on for centuries, and with the same things happening almost each day. So a lot of these warriors have been here for a very, very long time, and they've built homes and made families. What a life to live. The same thing also, every day.
Yeah, it's so Groundhog's Day. Like, has Wren been like waiting there every day for them to get across the river? Like every day he's like, all right, like, come on, get across the river.
Yeah, so another orb ready to go.
Yeah, do my orb thing.
Yeah, at least over 100 years, right?
Yeah, centuries. So a couple hundred at least. And
yeah,
it's a long time. I mean, I realize it's not as long to them because they live so long, but
I mean, still though, to do that every day is pretty wild. All right, so just as all is calm, there's panic once more. So the feeders that have fallen into the ice river are now crawling their way onto land. Kingfisher yells, he's like, go! And Wren is like, I'll stay with Saris. Like, you go do what you need to do. And Kingfisher becomes what they call unspeakably Fey, right? And you see magic just radiating off of him. So he's like full mode. And I question, why is this the first time that the feeders figure out how to come to the other side? Like, even Renfis is like shaken that this is happening.
Interesting.
Have they always been able to do that, and Malcolm has never pushed them to do so?
Yeah, maybe. Like,
that
maybe
would be my guess.
Or maybe is it reaction to Kingfisher? Like, obviously they're not like, the feeders aren't like, oh, it's Kingfisher, like, here we go. But does it have something to do with like his magic being present that, you know, draws them more? Or
maybe. Yeah.
Something.
Well, they're all connected to Malcolm, as far as I understand. So is it Malcolm's reaction to Kingfisher's magic?
Right.
Is he like mad, like more angry, right? And so he's like sending
like
out
more adrenaline, right? Like,
yeah.
Like when you run a race, you usually run it faster or feel less fatigued because you're doing your race. It's not like every day of training where you're like, mm-hmm. I'm just doing my normal thing. Just
crossing the river once more.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's a good guess. That'd be my guess. Yeah. So more vampires are crawling out, right? The feeders are coming out. And Ren says, ready yourself. Let's meet these fuckers with steel. And then there's a little voice that says, and us. And it whispered, us too, and us. And at first, she's like, Cersei's like, what does that sound? And it's Solas, the sword that was Kingfisher's father's that he gave to her. So because there's Quicksilver imbued in it, it can talk to Cersei. So the sword's like, let's go, boo. I'm ready.
Yeah. This Quicksilver likes to fight.
Yes. Unlike the other Quicksilvers, that's like, I'm sick of it. Right? Poor Danya's sword's like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Put me in an instrument. I'm good.
Yeah. But also, Solas hasn't seen that war in a really, really long time.
Yeah.
So it's probably like, oh, man, finally. I've been bored, like just sitting in this pool of dried silver, chilling out, right? Yeah. So they're climbing out of the water, and the feeders look like they're twitching. They're like half alive, half fey. Ren's cutting them down. He's also using some orbs to stop them. So he's using like a mixture. He yells at Cersei to go find Lorth and get away. But she says no, she declines. And she's like, I'm staying here to fight with you, right? She's like, I promise to stay with you, and I am safer with you than alone in the woods. And he goes, stubborn girl, don't you dare die on my watch, Cersei Fane. Fisher will never forgive me for if his sole reason for living is torn to pieces on her first fucking battlefield. Ren, like, I love that Ren knows.
Living. Yeah.
Yeah. The sole reason this man is still alive. Like, you have got to live. So I love that Ren knows and has accepted and understands. So Cersei stabs at a vampire coming at her, and she learns she must cut the whole head off for them to die. So she goes into training mode, essentially. So she runs toward the bank to get rid of some before they even get out of the water and get to Ren. Ren calls her back because there's too many. And Ren says that he'll hurt them, like he'll wound them, and then she'll finish them off, right? And then there's like black smoke coming near the bank as well. This is a really interesting moment that I had to reread and re-listen to a few times to fully understand what's happening. Time slows down and Cersei feels calm, and she can see the moves of the vampires before they're happening, and it feels like she has all the time to react, right? So like, this is some seer shit. She's literally seeing what they are about to do and then is able to jump ahead and act upon it. And Ren is stunned. He's like, what was that? And she says, I don't know. And then Kingfisher like shows up and is sweeping her up and is concerned. He's like, are you okay? Are you good? And Ren's like, oh yeah, no, she's been kicking ass with Solas, like almost as good as your dad. What are your thoughts? I was like, what are they talking about?
I just like, what is it though? Like,
I don't know. That's what I said. It's like some seer stuff. Like,
right. Is that,
is it the power of holding a god sword?
Right.
Yeah. Is it the power of Solas?
I don't know.
I don't know. I couldn't figure it. I was like, what?
But also, like, we don't really come back to that, right?
I don't think we do either. I couldn't find anything. So if you guys are listening to this and I missed something or you know where it's at, like tell me and I will go research it again. And as I'm going through the rest of it and writing the rest of our episodes as well, like if I end up finding it and figuring it out, I will update you guys as well. But no, that's like,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't remember going back to that power, that feature at all.
Yeah, and I was like, what is happening? My guess is that it's Solas. It's the using the god sword.
And that I would agree with. Like, they aren't just normal swords, right? They are, like, imbued items, so.
Correct.
Yeah, kind of makes sense.
But I was like, what is happening? So Kingfisher pulls Nymeril and he takes the vampires down as a bright white light shows up at the edge of the Darn. Lorth and the Angel's Breath takes out a ton of them, right? Their stretch of river is finally clear and all the soldiers are howling with Kingfisher, Lorth of the Broken Spire, Lorth of the Darn, and they're chanting for him, right? So he's finally taking his place as the wonderful warrior that he is. And he's worked very hard for this, and he is where he was meant to be, right, this whole time.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, somebody yells, "Kingfisher," in a shrill female cry. And we learn that it's Everlane across the river with the vampires. End chapter 31.
Couldn't just have a happy moment.
I know, not for one second. They're like, "Lorith, Lorith." And she's like, "Ah, Kingfisher, help." No. Yeah. He's so
like, "Lorith." What?
Who's yelling?
Who is yelling?
I'm surprised
at
that they
me?
Even like, that they even heard her, considering how like loud they were chanting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, Everlane is across the way and she is stuck. So we start off in the same place in chapter 32, labeled Taladeus, which if you have listened to our last episode of the bonus chapters, we do talk a little bit about Taladeus in that episode, as well as like a backstory about him and Fisher's relationship and old friendship that they had. So this chapter was very interesting to me. So Ren and Kingfisher they're both shocked, right? You can see that Everlane is super, super scared. Kingfisher pulls like a gate up and he's about to jump through, but Ren stops him. He's like, "The gate won't open over there," right? Because the magic doesn't work over there. He's like, I don't know where that gate's going to go, but it won't be over to the other side. And then he says, "Fine, I'll just swim over there." And Ren's like, "No, they want you to go over there. Why would they just have her hanging out here without killing her? The vampires are fighting literally around her to not feed on her. Like something is blocking them." So she yells, she asks Kingfisher to stay away and that she's only a little bit hurt. And then Ren's like, "Swim to us." And she's like, "I can't." And Ren's like, "What do you mean you can't?" And Kingfisher realizes and whispers, "Her neck. Look at her neck." And if you were looking, there's a thin band of metal and a gold chain. So she's like literally trapped, which is super unfortunate. A tall, handsome man with blonde cropped hair and a full black outfit, who we learned looks younger than Malcolm, but is just as powerful because Ceres can literally feel the power. And we learn that this is Taladeus. And he says, "I see you managed to restore one of your precious swords. I'm sure that feels like such a feather in the cap." Lorth shoots out a small bit of angel's breath, but it stops halfway across the river at that imaginary wall. Yeah, so the magic literally, it like blocked it across the way. I'm assuming because of the rules?
Yeah. That's what
The soil, I mean, I guess there is technically soil at the bottom of the river. So maybe the magic spews up?
Even like, I think about like countries that are divided by like bodies of water. Right, like somewhere is the end of U.S. waters off the United States coast. So that's how I always imagined it reading it. It's just that's where like the end of state lines almost, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the magic just literally doesn't work over there.
Yeah.
Ugh. So stressful. So like Everlane's literally stuck over there. Everybody's freaking out. And Taladeus asks Kingfisher to join them for some dinner and some wine. And though if you have read the bonus chapters, you understand the wine concept. And now that we have posted the bonus chapters episode, I am expecting you have all read them. So now I'm going to throw spoilers out there. So back in the day when Fisher was stuck in the maze, Taladeus used to bring him bottles of wine because he wasn't allowed to eat or drink like water or eat food or anything. So that was
also interesting to think that the like timeline between when Fisher last saw him is not that long.
No, maybe like a couple weeks, if not a few months, right?
Right.
She hasn't been gone for that long
time. No.
Mm-mm.
Whereas when I read it before reading the bonus chapters, in my mind, it had been, you know,
a couple years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like they've been like, separated for a long time, but they have not.
Reading it for the first time, you don't even know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I would, you know, you could read it and feel like they had been apart or he had not seen him for hundreds of years, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
And if you hadn't read the bonus chapters, the dinner and wine thing would not really, you'd like, oh, that's kind of weird. All right, whatever. It's dinner and wine. But like reading the bonus chapters, you're like, rude.
Yeah.
So mean. Right. And he's like, fuck you, Taliadas. Like, this is not happening. Right. And right. Taliadas says, you know, I don't have a stomach for hurting the things you care about. My father, on the other hand, he does like adding to his collection. And this is true because Taliadas, when Kingfisher was stuck with them, had a really hard time hurting Kingfisher and torturing Kingfisher. And Malcolm knew that and made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a true statement. Right. And I do know that like Taliadas is putting on somewhat of an act over here to maybe make his father happy, but like he truly does not want to hurt Kingfisher.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions since losing one of his most special prizes, he'd want to replace it with something just as valuable, right? Which we obviously know he lost Kingfisher and he would like to replace him. So there's hatred and pain in Kingfisher's eyes. And he says, he's asking like Everlane, he says, Malcolm bit you, right? Like as a question. And Everlane's mouth moves, but Kingfisher is casting his voice. And Hope leaves his eyes and Ren drops to his knees. Did the voice casting go all the way across? Yeah. Or was it just far enough that it hit the wall and then the Fae hearing took over?
Mm-hmm. That,
it doesn't explain that. I just had a question. And I'm nitpicking that for sure. But I just wondered.
That's what I would assume. I also would feel like he's like, you're a bit? And I feel like she's just like, yeah. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel like she's like screaming back. But it is interesting because he could hear her when she called out his name.
Right. Because they have like, and it's coming from Saris's perspective and she does not have that Fae hearing. So it very well could be like, she's like, I can see her mouth moving and everyone else seems to understand her, but I don't know what's happening. Yeah.
I feel like that's probably it, honestly.
No, yeah, but she does mention that he voice casts. So I just wondered. Interesting. So again, Hope is gone. Ren is on his knees and she says, but she's not dead. Taelenna can save her and she can remove the venom in her veins just like she did to me, right? So like when Saris got scratched and Saris did not get bit.
Yep.
She just got scratched. So I want everyone to keep that in mind. So it's very different. And Ren says she can't come home now. She's his. Kingfisher explains that basically she's enthralled to him, right? And Saris is like, I don't know what does that mean? Like, someone explain to me. And again, no one explains to her anything, right? So miscommunication trope. But he's like, later, little Osha, I'll tell you later. And Ren asks, what do you want, Taliadas? Why did you bring her? And Taliadas goes, careful, Renfus. I am Lord of Midnight to you. I won't be addressed, but one so slow or so low. And Kingfisher's like, no, he is a million times the man you'll ever fucking be. Now answer the question. Like, what is happening here? Taliadas explains that she is being used as bait for Kingfisher and that he wants to break something special to him. He'll either have to come save her for vengeance sake or Kingfisher will come back to Malcolm. And it is noted again that the Quicksilver is spinning in his eye this time.
So it's probably speaking to him.
It's probably speaking, and it's interesting, it's spinning instead of just like moving or jostling or shaking. So I wonder what it's saying. Now that we know like different things that it's doing, is it showing them all as Everlane? Is it showing all the feeders? Is it like, what is it doing to him?
And obviously like his own thoughts are probably going a million miles a minute too, because he's like, okay, like how do I get back Everlane? How do I not fall for the bait aspect of this and, you know, surrender myself while trying to get her back?
Exactly.
So.
And even if they get her back right now, she still belongs to Malcolm.
Right.
So at this point, Lorth shows up. He's sliding down the hill. He sees Taliadas and he's like pissed, right? And he's like, fuck, is that Everlane? And everyone's like, yeah, no, that's her. And she's already tagged. She's already been bit, right? And Kingfisher finally asks, where is he? Like, where is Malcolm? And Taliadas says, he's waiting for you, friend. at the place the two of you brokered your last deal. And Kingfisher's like, there won't be any more deals. Everling was bit 12 hours ago, we learn. So Malcolm is currently riding north with his horde. If Kingfisher does not meet Malcolm, Malcolm will ensure that she makes it through the change and becomes essentially like a slave to him and the vampires, right? There's a lot of things that will happen to her. It will be really, really bad. So obviously worst case scenario right there. And yeah. Lorith asks, like, what does he want? And Kingfisher says, well, he wants me. And Calidaeus contradicts. He says, that's true, but there are now other pieces in play here, and Malcolm will always get what he wants. And in this moment, Kingfisher finally understands, like, he cannot have her.
Yeah.
He cannot have her. And you might think that we're talking about Everlane, but we quickly realize that Calidaeus is talking about Ceres. And he says, you can kick and scream all you'd like, but he wants the alchemist Fisher. Even if he has to burn down all of Avelia, he will. Ouch. End chapter 32. Thoughts?
I mean, but makes sense. Of course he would want Ceres. He would still have Fisher if it wasn't for Ceres.
Correct. Exactly. He would still have her. And I think even if Ceres wasn't an alchemist, he would still want her because she's important to him.
Yeah, she's important to him. She's the reason, right? Like, if she wasn't an alchemist, they never would have, he'd still be in the maze. So it's like twofold, right? Like, he's angry that he escaped the maze, and that's the reason why. And like you said, she's important to him. So I feel like it, you know, it's twofold there. And she's a valuable thing to have.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, she is a weapon, essentially.
Yeah.
So, ugh. Did you see that part coming when you were reading the book?
That he would want Ceres?
Or that he would take Everlane?
I did not foresee him taking Everlane. I remember thinking, oh, it's like weird that Everlane is so important and then she's kind of just gone. Like, why, you know, why haven't we heard from her?
Right.
But I did not foresee her being like captured and used as bait.
I wondered how she got over there. And I know they asked that too. They're like, how the heck did she get over there? But it is interesting. I was a little confused when I was reading that. I was like, how did she... Did she get kidnapped? Right, like, did someone like take her? How does anyone get over there? There's a river.
How
is this working?
It's not like she was like walking around in the woods.
Right. She's at the castle.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So weird. So chapter 33, Blood in Thanks. So Malcolm has Everlane. Obviously, as we know, Lorth is super upset. He's pacing around the room. He's pacing around like the war tent. And every time he turns, he hits Avias with his sword on something because he isn't used to having a sword of his own strapped to his back, right? And even when he turns to leave, he hits Ren's shin. And I love that even in these serious moments, Callie throws some humor in there to like lighten it up just a little bit with something that's a little bit more realistic, right? Like, Lorth does not know how to hold this sword like on his back or just like carry it around. He's a little bit awkward with it. He's using it well, but it is a little weird for him. So Fisher, in this point, has basically gone catatonic and is just sitting next to Ceres. He's not speaking. He's not acknowledging anybody. And he's not even, like, mind speaking. She's trying. She's like, hey, like, let me in, right, through the mind. And nothing there. Stonewall. Ren tells Ceres that he is thinking and literally cannot hear anybody right now. So bro's gone. Ren is pretty sure that somewhere – what was that?
Why doesn't it? I wish it said what the Quicksilver was doing in his eye.
That would have been very interesting. Yeah, because this is the first time that we know that Kingfisher can't hear anybody, basically. He is somewhere else, basically.
Yeah,
we do not know what the Quicksilver is doing. That would have been cool to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't, unfortunately. That would have been awesome. Ren is pretty sure that somewhere in the library of Kalish there are answers, because there are hundreds of books on the blood curse, and Fisher's father studied the curse for decades. And there is probably some more information there about breaking the what they call the thrall, like the one Everlane is in now with Malcolm, since he bit her, right? We learn also that Malcolm was the very, very first Fae to be cursed when Ruik Dianthus, who's Carrion's dad, found a cure for the curse. Malcolm was one of them among them who chose not to accept it, right? Which we know that. We know that he chose not to accept that when the time came when everyone else was trying to get cured. Those who also chose not to accept the cure were systematically killed off, leaving Malcolm to be one of the last left. It says that there are rumors that every time one of them was killed, their power was given to Malcolm, or kind of like siphoned to Malcolm, which is why he's so powerful. But that was never proven. Do you think that's true?
I think that's pretty. I believe it. I think that's pretty common in like vampire lore anyway. Like just generally across different authors and books and media.
So was it because he was the first one that or as each one dies, is the power spread out across them all, and because he's the last left, the power eventually went to him? Or did all of the power automatically go to him?
I would think because he's one of the last ones. That's what I would think it would be going to him.
Right, but like, so like before, right? So like the cure is going out. There's 10 of them, for example, that choose not to take it. They die one by one. Does the one out of 10 that dies, does the power go to the 9 of them? And then as one more is done, the power goes to the 8 of them. And then as one more dies, the power goes to the 7 of them eventually, because he's supposedly the last one. Does then he have all the power then? Or is it automatically one dies and it all goes to him? Because he was
I would assume the first way you said it, as one dies, it spreads among who's left.
Okay. And that's kind of what I thought too. It doesn't tell us. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll get answers on that in book two, or if that's even like something that she's thinking it, like if Callie's thinking about that at all. I just was like wondering if it might be a red herring too, right? It might just be like something that's put in there. But we do learn
one of the last.
Mm-hmm.
Did somebody else? Are we going to meet somebody else?
I don't know. Maybe she does say there's a lot of new characters coming into book two. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a very good question.
Yeah. It would be interesting for Saris,
because now she's in charge,
right?
So
what part would that individual play?
Right. And then what part do all the princes play?
Yeah.
As well. We do learn that if one of the princes bites a human, right, they can bite as many times as they want before that, like, or they can bite a ton of times before that human is enthralled. If Malcolm bites a human, they are enthralled immediately. That's all it takes. Once enthralled, they live for only a few days, doing everything to please their master, and then they die. So Everlane is truly running out of time. Everlane currently has two options right now. She can drink from Malcolm and become almost like one of his lords, like one of the princes, right? Or she can refuse to drink from him and die and become one of the feeders. That realization kind of hits Fisher in the face, and he comes back to focus. Like, he's back. He can hear you now. He's like starting to have thoughts again out loud. Before things can be discussed further, though, about this whole situation, Danya comes in. So she walks in the tent. She's super pissed. She heads straight for Loreth, who stands tall and crosses his arms and takes a blow to the face without blocking it. She's like, she walks up and she's like, bop, right in the mouth, right? And he knew what was coming. So he literally crosses his arms and he just braces himself. Wild.
Yeah, I would not. I'd be like, calm down. I'd grab her fist. Calm down.
Yeah. Nope, he just sits and he just takes it, right? He's like, all right, here we go. I mean, they heal fast, right? Like, fast fae healing. And
yeah, but nobody wants to be punched in the face.
No, nobody wants to be punched.
Think about how mad Fisher got when Saris punched him in the face.
Yep. Sweet Loreth, though. He's like, all right, okay.
He's like, here it is. Okay. He just give me your best shot.
But yeah, it does suck because he knows, right? She's there for the sword. At first, I thought she was pissed because of Everlane. I thought maybe she was like really upset about all of those things and was going to yell all of them for what, for like not protecting her or whatever the case may be. But nope, straight for the sword, which I don't even know if at this point Danya knows what happened to Everlane because she was not there for that war or for that battle as far as I knew.
Probably not.
So she might not even know.
In my mind, she arrived and somebody was like, hey, this just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, Everlane got bit, but obviously the sword is her priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's definitely there for the sword. And Fisher reminds her that it's no longer hers, right? And she's like, I earned that sword. And he goes, you did not. It was given to you by your dad. And her sword was never alive when she received it. So she's never held the God Sword when it was truly active, right? So she had heard rumors of what would happen if a God Sword was touched by someone who wasn't the owner, but she truly did believe that this was still her sword, right? No one ever explained to her the concept of like, I took down this sword, I remade it, mm-hmm. I made a pact with it. It's totally new. It's totally different now. And so she was going to take the sword, right? So she laid her hand on it and poof, her hand literally disappears into pink mist. And there's not a lot of things that gross me out, but when she used the words pink mist, I was like, ew. It's like when someone says the word moist, but I don't, that word doesn't bother me, but I know it bothers a lot of people. But I was like, that's so gross. It was her sword hand too.
Yeah, it did not gross me out. In my mind, I was like, why pink? But like, I guess like, human matter.
Yep, all the things. Just like poof, pink mist.
I was like, why not blue mist?
Why not? Oh, like magic mist? No, not magic mist.
That's
no
how
gore.
I
gore mist.
Yeah, I'm tracking now.
Does it gross you out a little bit more up now?
No, not really.
Okay,
it's mist.
I got the ick.
It's not like. Was there like mist on the ground?
My guess is that there was a little bit of mist probably everywhere around her. Right? It's probably on her clothes and on the floor.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it just disappeared. I'm pretty sure it's like everywhere. It just, the hand basically exploded. Maybe I'm overthinking it because I had to reread it a bunch of times and like write the episode. But yeah, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, gross.
So the pommel lit up brightly and literally threw Danya across the room. So this all happened at the same time. So she touched it, hand goes poof, and then she's like bop. She's like blasted across, right?
Yeah.
I love Danya. She did deserve this. Yeah, everyone is being put in their place every once in a while. She's
real
mean.
Knows, right? Like, it's not like she like didn't know what happens when people touch.
Yeah, God, she had heard rumors about it.
Belong to them, right?
Yeah, but again, she truly did think that this was still her sword. So I get why she
Everyone
touched it.
Everyone told you.
Yeah, we did tell you.
Also,
there was
like,
no miscommunication
else has
here.
Been holding it, right? Like if it was still your sword, their hand would have been pink mist.
But would it have been though? Because it wasn't alive when Danya had it.
Mm.
So during this time, Fisher has zero sympathy for her, and he tells her to calm down so he can take her back to Kalish and hopefully have the hand regrown. Which
ew.
Did you say ew?
That grosses me out. Yeah, it's like Deadpool with his little hand.
No. I was literally gonna ask you if it reminds you of the baby hand of Deadpool's little baby hand.
Yes,
okay,
it does.
Finally. Sometimes I feel like I say these examples and you're like, no.
If it's a Marvel example, I'm there.
Okay. I was like, Deadpool, little baby hands, little baby legs.
Weird.
So, yes.
Little hand holding a dagger.
Weird. So, he says that they're all going back to Kalish, actually. Not just him and Danya. Half of them are going to go see Taelenna so they can get healed. And then half of them are going to tear this library apart for answers. But before they can head back to college, one very important thing had to happen first. They all had to thank Ceres for fighting alongside them with Solace and acknowledging her as a warrior. She's like, actually, no, we don't need to do that. And they're like, yes, we 100% do. We're doing it right now. Here we go. So each one of them take turns kneeling in front of her, cutting their palm on their own blade and putting a bloody hand in the center of her chest, giving their blood in thanks. When it's Kingfisher's turn, he kneels, cuts his hand, and says, I give my blood to you in thanks, Ceres Fane, saying her name to her for the first time ever. End chapter.
Wow.
Oh, so cute.
It is.
I love it. Yeah. So that is the end of chapter 33. In chapter 34, so everyone's coming through the Shadow Gate right now, and they're all going to the dining room. And this is one of my favorite scenes. This is terrible. So Ceres sits down. She comes to the gate. She sits down at her normal place now, right? Which is on the right-hand side of the table. Dania, unfortunately, comes through right after. And she, and I, not commend her. I don't know what the word is that I need. But like to literally not have your hand, but have the audacity to be like, well, look at you. Like to be snarky. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think any of them have like lost their hand before? Or like a foot? Like, do you think
they had to because there's no cross guards like on the swords? Somebody somewhere had to have a hand loss.
Right. Like, because none of them are really fazed by it.
I mean, I guess that's true. Like,
they're all like, meh, go see a healer. Like, let's go get your hand back.
But Ceres wasn't even fazed. She was more like, ah, oh, serves her right. Like, she wasn't even like, oh my God, she lost a hand.
Well, at this point, I feel like Ceres has seen so much in such a short amount of time.
She's numb.
Yeah. It just learned helplessness for her at this point. She's just like, okay.
Okay, no Daniel hand. Lost a hand. Cool. It's cool.
Vampires, cool.
Yeah, same. Cool. Okay, all right. I mean, but would like, you put it that way?
Like, I know, like, Fisher's like, eh, like, serves you right. And, like, I'm also, like, thinking of, like, Everlane and getting mm-hmm. her. But you'd think he would have been like, oh, my God, your hand.
You're right. One of
the valuable fighters.
But, I mean, even if they, it's happened before to them and they, it wasn't a big deal, the pain. Like, the pain.
You think it's painful?
How can it not be? I mean, I know they heal fast and I know they probably have a higher pain tolerance, but like you lost a limb. That's gotta hurt.
Yeah,
right?
But it just like evaporated into mist, right?
It sure
like it didn't
did.
Get chopped off.
I wonder if it like cauterized itself.
That's what I mean. Like
she did lose a lot of blood. She ends up passing out.
Gone. Mm.
You know what I mean? Like she ends up fainting.
Oh, she's a tough lady.
She's so tough. She's so tough that she can lose a hand and still throw sassy remarks because yes. she looks at Ceres and she goes, well, look at you, the jumped up little alchemist sitting in the pride of place at the family table. You'd better move before the others arrive or you're going to find yourself very embarrassed. And again, I want to yell at all of these men for not communicating to either one of them. Yeah. They set this up. They did this. This is their fault. This fight could have been avoided.
That's at least Ren, like
somebody. Yeah, Ren.
Ren should have said something.
Yeah, by the way, this is where Ceres sits now. I expect more from Ren. He can do no wrong. I say
me
that.
Too.
But also, come on, dude. Like, just tell somebody. Right? And so Ceres finally has the ask the question, right? What does this seat even mean? Like, what is happening?
Yeah, she's like, okay.
Yeah, somebody finally tell me what's going on, because I don't know. And she goes, that seat is reserved for the lady of the house, you stupid girl. Etiquette dictates that only Fisher's wife is permitted to sit there. It's a position of high honor meant for a fey female born into one of the old houses. And you're just sprawled out there like you own the damn seat. It's offensive that he even lets a human sit the same table as him. But this? So mean. But at least she knows.
I just rolled my eyes. While you're reading, rolled my eyes, and then I was like, oops.
No, I get it. Like, it's a little mean. It's a little mean.
It's just Yeah.
I wish she would have worded it differently. Like, I get that she's upset.
It's
and
the
I,
human
like, I
part,
get the shock.
I'm like, all right. Yeah.
Just tell her. She'd be like, that's where the wife sits. I don't know why you're there. You should probably move.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's feeling spicy. So Ren comes in right after them and he tells Sarah, he's like, you're just fine where you are. And he winks at her. And then Fisher strolls in right after him and puts his hands on Sarah's shoulders. And Daniel's like, what the fuck? You all treat her like some important foreign emissary. She's just a human. What other rules is she allowed to break? And Fisher says she's not breaking any rules. And if she did, it's none of our business.
Why doesn't also he talk to Dania about it?
You would think.
Like, why is he not like, hey, look, she's an important weapon to us. She's important to me. I know you can smell her on me.
Right.
So.
And she says it
calm
too.
Down.
Like, he just needs to say a couple words and she'll sit. Daniel would probably calm down. Right. But he's like, it's none of our business. And she's not breaking any rules. Like, he's so short with her, which makes her more angry. Like, Dania, I feel like, is the kind of Fae that needs that communication in order to fully understand the situation.
Yeah.
We probably needed Morel here. I feel like Morel was probably, like, the glue.
Actually, you're probably right.
That would be my guess, is Morel would be like, all right, like, calm down. She obviously means a lot to Fisher. Like, no one has told this lady. I feel like Morel was probably that Fae. And now that she's not there, I feel like Dania's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It doesn't ever tell us that, but if I had to guess about Morel's place in the pack, that's what I would guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so again, she's not breaking any rules, and Renfis reminds her that Ceres is the most powerful alchemist and disarmed her in less than a second. And Dania, just like we kind of had said, finally brings up that Fisher and Ceres are fucking around and attempts to use that as a tactic, but Renfis asks her... he's like, who are you to tell them that they can't be together? And Fisher like stiffens up, right? She can feel it with his hands on her shoulders. And she was waiting for a snarky remark from Fisher about how stupid they all sounded. And he simply reminded them that his personal life is none of their business, which fair. And then enter Carrion Swift from his nap.
Heck yeah.
He like strolls in through this gate with Lorth, right? And he's like, oh, it's cold Selenir. And he's like hanging on to his newly potted plant. He slept through the entire battle and Lorth found him in the tent in like this big old fluffy coat. And they were like, why do you have a plant? And he's like, well, my tent was really like boring and bare. It needed some color. And I found this plant that was growing on all the snow. And I was like, you're coming home with me.
You're coming home with me.
Yeah, exactly. Insert TikTok meme here. Oh my gosh. It was so funny.
I love him.
Dania ends up fainting, like we had said earlier, loss of blood, and Lorth had to catch her and take her to the healers about being the hand being regrown, right? So end of Dania's show. Ceres is sent back to the forge to make as many relics as possible because Hisha's like, we're going to need them, right? But before they go their separate ways, Carrion notes, she had smoking hot blonde said I was pretty. And she's like, oh, Carrion, don't tell me you have a thing for Dania. And she's like, she's fucking awful. And Carrion goes, I love a girl with a sharp tongue and a bad attitude. Kind of makes my dick hard.
This is like one of the most quotable Carrion
lines. Do you know what I ship?
What do you ship?
I ship
Carrion and Dania.
Carrion and Dania. Can you imagine like the bulldog girl, like so tough, and then just like the goofy, flirty guy. Yeah. And she doesn't like humans, but he is not human. He is Fae. They just don't know it yet at this point in time.
Together.
And I think they're gonna end up together. That's my guess.
Yeah.
I think Carrion's gonna end up saving Dania, or vice versa. And they're gonna be together. That's my goal. I ship it.
Yeah, I would put my eggs in that basket.
That's I believe Brimstone theory number 100.
Yeah,
these two end up together. Yes, I love it. I ship it. I want it to happen. I think it will humble Dania, and I think it will rein in Carrion in the best way.
Yeah,
And I don't know what he will do when he like eventually is like loyal to a woman.
Yeah, are we gonna get a wedding?
Oh my god. With a dragon.
And two arms. Not one. Two hands.
Oh, I was like, who lost their arm? What did I miss? Were we taking bets someone's gonna lose an arm?
Just no. Like Dania, she'll have two arms.
Two arms, two hands. One no carrion.
Yeah.
So funny. So Ceres and Carrion go into the forge and they're working on the relics. It's not going well, which was surprising, right? Like she should get it now. But every relic, every Quicksilver wants something a little bit different. And it insisted it didn't want anything. It had no interest in being a relic and it was bored of her. She said it was bored of me poking and prodding at it and it didn't want to be bothered anymore. Which, okay, fair. You just didn't find the right thing yet. That's fine. And I like that she was like, what do you want? And it was like, I don't want anything. So.
Quicksilver.
You know what it reminded me of? My favorite, The Notebook. What do you want? It's not that simple. What do you want? Like Noah and Allie fighting.
Yes, exactly.
It's not that simple. So Carrion, making himself very unuseful, had some questions about their current situation. He says, I take it you've forgiven our benevolent kidnapper for his crimes then? You and he seem very close. He states that they only slept together one time and they're not even really exes. So like no hurt feelings over here. It's not a big deal if he talks to her. And we learn that Ceres has forgiven Fisher, obviously, for all the things. And Carrion goes on to note that he figured out why he had to take such an in-depth bath because he ended up asking the water sprites. They said Fae who liked to bedhop were fond of it because it eradicated the scent of their other partners. I couldn't think of why Fisher would care if I smelled like those triplets who just started working at Kala's. And he would say that. He would say that.
This grossed me out because I was like, it really brings to light like that they never bathe.
Ever.
Gross.
That's why I was like, how did she know how to, in like way back episodes, how did Ceres know how to wash her hair? How did she know? But she knew. Nobody told her. In the book, instinct. At least. I don't know. Yeah. She figured it out, I guess. But I was like, how did you know that? Yeah.
So
but then
gross.
He says, but then I realized that it was you. He didn't want me smelling like you. Sarah states that Fisher has many secrets and who knows why he really did what he did about the bath. I don't know. And then the Quicksilver perks up and it says, we like secrets. We'll change for you if you tell us one. So finally she figured out what it wanted. It was like, oh, a secret. Okay. Nosy Quicksilver. Same. I do like knowing things. So Ceres is weary about this because the last time she made a deal, she lost an entire song, like forever. So she asks if she will remember the secret that she's telling him. It goes, you will know, and so will I, but I won't tell, I swear it. And I like how like cutesy the Quicksilver can be sometimes. It's like,
what would you ask for?
If I was the Quicksilver?
Yeah.
I do like having a secret. I like knowing things that other people don't know. That's like a real life too. I'm like, oh, you have something to tell me? Okay, I'm listening.
Oh. Oh, there's tea over here.
Yes, give me
tea.
I would ask for tea once a week. Not just one little piece of tea. Like whatever you're gonna forge me, and someone has to tell me some gossip every once in a while. That's what I would want. I don't want to be in a sword. That seems like a lot. I don't think that's for me.
It's a lot of pressure.
It is. I do like being a ring though. I would want like a little relic. Jewel on my ring on me.
Like his necklace.
Yeah. You could make me into a relic, but only Kingfisher can wear me.
And he has to tell me a secret every week.
He has to tell me I'm pretty all the time. That's what I want. I am a selfish Quicksilver. What would you wish for?
It's okay. Me? Oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know, but I would want to be like a relic. You don't want to be a sword. Like, what if you're in peace times? Then you're just sheathed on a wall,
sheathed
mantle.
All the time. Well, they still have to carry their swords, right? I mean, I think that they would.
In times of peace?
Maybe.
There's
maybe
nothing not. Going on.
I guess that's true. Yeah, I don't want to be a sword
either. I don't know what initially I would ask for, but I would ask to be in like a necklace or a ring for sure.
You could ask for a favor to use at a later date. Or true. I will forge right now, but you have to come back if I make a request. Because it can always talk to her. It can ask for something later.
I would ask for three wishes to be granted at a later time.
Yes. And one of those can be more wishes.
Yes.
Because I'm the Quicksilver and I'm in charge.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. No, I love that. We got thoughts. We don't want to be swords.
Yeah.
That's, at least we know that.
Nah, it seems like a little much.
Yeah. It's just not for me, right? So yeah. Again, we figure out that it's because Ceres was smelling like carrion. Ew. We figure out that the sword or the Quicksilver wants to hear a secret and she will remember the secret, right? So she tells the Silver that she does not want to go back to Zelvarin. She wants Hayden Elroy to come to Kalish and so that she can be here with them and with Fisher. The Silver accepts this secret, but tells us something interesting. It says, yes, a good secret. Very good. You want to stay. You want to save him. You must. You must. And she like makes a face and she's watching the Quicksilver real closely and it's vibrating next to the ring in the bowl of the crucible. And she's like, save him? And she's like, yeah, no, Hayden, I definitely want to bring him here. And this is where I rolled my eyes. I was like, okay. Girl, we're back to this again where you are just, where's Hayden at? Where's Hayden? The Quicksilver doesn't give a shit about your brother. It literally doesn't know him. Like...
It's like,
no.
Okay, I'm back to the tea, please.
Yeah, it's like, no. Not that. And it goes, not the brother, the Kingfisher. And it drawled out the name, right? And so the Quicksilver's like buzzing. It says, save him, save the gates, save Yvelia. And as the Quicksilver is enveloping the ring with itself, it asks for blood from the alchemist, right? She pokes her finger and a little drop of blood comes out. And we learn that Carrion is not a fan and is literally about to be sick. LOL. I laughed out loud with this scene.
How come it can ask for blood after it's already asked for a secret? It's unlimited requests.
If you want him to forge, right? It can change its mind. What are the consequences? What happens if it changes its mind? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
I guess so.
It's a Quicksilver's world. Yeah. We just live in it.
That's true.
It does whatever, whenever, however it wants. And Ceres has very little control over it at this moment in her life.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, sure. Got it. You want blood? Here we go. Carrion's hand? Carrion's blood? It's fine. Ugh. So yes. And I laugh now even more after like being able to talk to Anthony and do that interview that we did about him saying this line. Like, oh, I'm going to be sick. I can't do blood. Like how funny that line really is.
Yeah.
And it's something that's like so minuscule as far as details go, but so it's just something we know about him now.
It's just and like those little comedic moments that lighten up the story a bit. So it's not just all heavy.
Right. Exactly. It was needed. So yeah. As the ring, it's complete now, and Ceres asks it one more time what it meant about saving Kingfisher. Obviously, it's not answering. It's done talking to her. It's gotten the tea that it needed. And she then had a feeling come over her, and she puts on the relic. She puts the ring on her finger. She is immediately surrounded with deafening sounds, and the words that we know, Anorath Mor, are being screamed at her. Over and over and over and over again, right? She's trying to get her bearings back. And eventually, Taylena shows up at the forge door and is able to snap her out of it. And she's like, Ceres? So Taylena is there to check on her injuries. But before anyone can, like, reply, Carrion steps in and tries his absolute hardest to swoon Taylena, who reminds him she is happily mated and married. And good thing for Taylena, because Carrion is into a couple situation.
Oh my god.
He is into all things. So Ceres notes that Taylena's tattoos all over her hands, and she told her tattoos that were for her and her mate when they were together for after 5 years. She has a harmony mark, a longevity mark, and two child marks. And she does note that the two child marks are a little greedy because it is hard for the Fae to bear children anyways. One, if nonetheless two, but she's like, couldn't hurt, right? And so she's like, they don't just show up on their own, the marks, like out of the blue overnight or while, you know, having sex with someone. And she's like, no, they don't. That's so weird.
Nope. Wrong.
And when I first read this, I was like, is no one noticing her tattoos? And then I remembered that they're like glamoured. You can't see them. Right. Yeah. So there's no tattoos currently visible on Ceres. And Taylena says, once upon a time, that was the case. Back when true mating bonds existed, unions between true mates were blessed with marks from fates. There were the tradition of inking our hands. That's where the tradition of inking our hands originated from. But there's no such thing as true mates anymore. When the gods left Yvelia, certain elements of our magic either died or waned over time. The god swords, for example, they were very, very slowly cut off from the source of the magic they channeled. Our ability to form mating bonds also died out over thousands of years until it disappeared altogether. It's a lot, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Ugh.
And this poor girl's like, holy shit, what's happening? Like, in her mind. She knows she's covered with them, right? And Ceres notes, Taylena notes that they don't get too many tattoos. And there was a couple ones that got 7, which was kind of a lot of tattoos. And Ceres, at the point, is sweating. Ceres is, like, panicking at the amount on her body and her hands, which is way more than 7. So Ceres asks about the writing or letting around the wrist. And Taylena tells a very sad story about this. She said they called it a god binding, a blessing from the gods themselves. They weren't real, of course. The most important couples in Yvelian history were said to have them, but it was all romantic rubbish. Just something storytellers embellished to make their tales more tragic. Plus, they looked impressive in the illuminated books. And she says the lovers in these stories always suffered terribly. One of them always died. They were beautiful tales, but they ended with heartbreak. Ceres is pale. Cool. Yeah. Oh, she's like, oh my god. Okay, great.
Not only do we have a mating bond, but I am god binded and one of us is gonna die. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
And meanwhile, Fisher's like, yeah, we'll just cover him up and you can decide about him later. Yeah,
it will fade. Fine. Probably. Oops. And this is where I go back to just tell her. And I know your argument of like, don't ask you to marry me on the first date, but like,
yeah,
come on.
You're god binded. Thank you so much for sleeping with me. We're actually god binded.
We're literally binded together.
Leave me. Yeah.
Like what did he think was going to happen? She would just, I don't know what his thought, I want to know what his thought process was. Like, was he going to approach her eventually?
Yeah, no, I think he was like, okay, I'm going to glamour him for a month. At the end of a month, we can talk about it.
Okay, so he probably had the plan to tell her.
I think so.
He had to, right?
I think so.
I hope so. I don't know. But either way, we don't get to it because Taylena is like, here's all the things about these tattoos. I don't know why you're so pale. And she's like, have you seen Kingfisher?
I gotta go.
I actually have to leave now. I have to go right now. And she's like, oh, yeah, he asked you, like, for in his bedroom. Like, that's where he's at. And she's like, okay, thanks, bye. And that is the end of that chapter. You're just shaking your head.
I can't.
If you're just listening to this on Spotify, all I see is Alyssa just shaking her head no back and forth. Like, is she
there's not even anything to say there.
No, like, there's not.
Yeah.
Just this poor girl like feeling woozy and knowing all these things all at once. And Taylena doesn't know that she just said all these things and like spilled all this tea.
Everyone's had that feeling where somebody tells you something and they don't realize what they're telling you is like
a secret
rocking your world. And you're just sitting there like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like I have to go. Talk to this person or do this thing or whatever it is. Yeah, so
I actually have to go just, now.
Yeah, I gotta go. Thank you.
Yeah, have a great day. Bye.
Yeah,
you're just like, okay. And then I can't even imagine how fast she ran to Kingfisher's room.
Yeah, and how much you're feeling, like disbelief, worry about the future.
Yeah. All the things.
Where does that leave your relationship? Angry with him? Like, that's a lot to digest.
I'd be so pissed. I'd be so mad. I probably would have told Taylena. I'd be like, girl, I got all these tattoos. What's happening? I don't think I could have held it in.
Yeah, I don't know.
Taylena seems nice.
Yeah.
I would have been like, okay, they're glamored right now. You can't see them, but there's like a bird right here and there's like all these relics on my hands. What's happening? What do they mean? Poor Taylena. They'll talk about it later at the wedding in the next book. Yeah. She's like, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, but like I had all these tattoos when I asked you.
Actually, you're the one that told me about what all of these mean and you didn't even know it.
It'll be a good thing to laugh at later when it's funny.
Yeah.
It's not funny right now to them. To us, it's funny.
I can't.
I love it. That's a good chapter to end on. That's a good moment to end on. We only have 3 more episodes to record after this, and then we're all done with Quicksilver.
Crazy.
It's bittersweet.
It is, but it's sweet knowing that Brimstone is coming soon.
Yes, Brimstone is coming soon. The bonus chapters are coming out. Like, everything is all and well in the world. I want to go to a release party so bad. I'm going to find us one. Maybe we'll host one somewhere at a bookstore. Ooh. Maybe we'll host one at a bookstore.
That sounds fun.
So if anyone in the Orlando area has a bookstore and they want us to host their Brimstone release midnight party, let us know. We'll bring goodies.
I'm going to hunt
stickers
down that.
Now.
I'm going to hunt down that. Ooh, look at those.
I was like, we have stickers. Check these out. These are cute.
Cute. I'm going to hunt down the Carrion bonus chapter if
Please
I can.
Please send it to me. I don't know if I need to like go to the dark web, wherever that is. I've never been there before. But if they're on there, I'll go. I looked on Reddit.
I'll do my best. Luck. I'll see what I can find.
Yes. Tell me. Show me to them. Okay. I need them. Or maybe there's someone that has a Waterstones edition that can, like, just send me them.
That's what I'm wondering. I'll do some research.
Okay. Investigative, Alyssa. On the case.
Yeah. On the case.
If you liked our episode, please like and subscribe. Share with your friends. Make sure, again, to check out our interview with the wonderful Anthony Palmini. He was amazing, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. Check us out next week.
Yep.
Woo!
Bye.
Bye. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.